Rishus, my father, tonight's shir should be for continued refuah shlema for Chaim Yisachar ben Chaim Mushkit, Didi ben Mazal, Yaakov Yitzchak ben Bat Yasara, Besoch Shar Chol Yisrael. Before we begin, I also just wanted to thank my daughter, Gabriella, for inspiring tonight's shir. Those of you a couple weeks ago, you heard the first part of that story. Parsha begins with Bnei Yisrael having just escaped from Mitzrayim. They travel for 3 days, and they're finally making some headway, getting away from Tumas Mitzrayim, getting away from the whole world of Mitzrayim, the Sheba Mitzrayim. And then suddenly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe something that's very unsettling, very disturbing. Source number one, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Dabra B'nei Yisrael, Vayashuvu V'yachanu Lefnei Piachiros. Why don't we just turn around? I mean, it's not like we've been slaves in Mitzrayim for 210 years. What's the rush? Do a little sightseeing, as we'll see. Bein Migdol, Bein Ayam, Lefnei Baal Tzafon, turn back towards Baal Tzafon, retrace your steps. What was Baal Tzafon? So Rashi explains that all the idols of Mitzrayim had been destroyed with the exception of this one idol. Kadosh Baruch Hu allowed this one idol, Baal Tzafon, to remain so that Par would think, oh look, my idol has a koach, it's pulling the Jewish people back, they're not able to escape, they're not able to complete their process of freedom. It's a koach of this tumah, of this Avodah Zarah. And Power becomes convinced that Bnei Yisrael are trapped in the Midbars, the Pasuk says explicitly, and he decides to have this new courage to chase after them and to try to bring them back. And of course, this is all part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's master plan to have the final showdown by Kriyas Yamsuf, that Power should chase after, and the whole world should recognize the koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Kriyas Yamsuf. Obviously, there's a lot to say about Kriyas Yamsuf itself, but tonight we're going to go in a very different direction. For those of you who knew what shir you were showing up for, maybe you thought it would be interesting. For those who didn't, tonight's shir will be about shapes. What do shapes have to do with this parsha of the Jewish people turning back towards Piachiros? What does it have to do with this parsha at all? So let's clarify exactly what Piachiros was. Hey, look at Rashi in source number 2. Rashi says, where is this? What is this? Who pitom? Rashi said that this is Pitom. This is the city that the Jewish slaves had been building all these years. We've heard of it before. Why is it called Piachiros all of a sudden? What does the name mean, Piachiros? Says Rashi, V'achshav nikra Piachiros, al shem shenasu b'nei chorin. The chiros part is freedom. The Jews are free. Okay, what's the P? V'hem shnei salam gavo muzakufim. It's these two large, hard to describe exactly, we'll try to flesh it out from the Medrash, but they're these two large cliffs. These two stone cliffs that were zakuf, right? They were standing erect. The hagesha b'neim kari piaslam, and the gap between them, the opening, the mouth between them, is called the pi. So piachiros means what? The place of freedom at this opening between these two large mountains. Okay, sounds very interesting. Chizkuni even points out that this place, piachiros or pitom, there was a tradition in Mitzrayim that any slave who had escaped past that point was free to go. That was the rule in Mitzrayim. If you were a slave in Mitzrayim, lav dafka Jews. But throughout Egyptian history, that was the checkpoint. If you could escape and get past that line, they let you go. That was part of Mitzri culture. That's what the Chizkuni brings down. Right? But they all turn around, and now they're standing. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, what's the rush to leave Mitzrayim? Let's go back. Let's look. Right? What was so interesting about Piachiros? So the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, you don't have it in front of you, adds one word. He says about Piachiros, Puma Chirasa Marvi Asa. It was square. It was square. Where did he get this from? These cliffs were square. It sounds very unusual for a cliff to be of such precise geometrical proportions. Where did he get it from? He got it from the Medrash. Medrash Mechilta and Medrash on Shemos in source number 3 describes this location very precisely. Let's take a look. Mahayu Chiros Halal. What exactly, what was this Piachiros? Again, Rashi told us Chiros is Milashon Chiros, but what exactly was it? Says the Medrash, it wasn't slanted as a cliff often is, as an incline often is, but rather it was gedudios. It was perfectly shaped. It was flat. It was even. It wasn't in any way on any side. It had no bumps. It had no crevices. It was perfectly even on all sides. Says the Medrash, where it's bolded. It had no curves. It was perfectly square. And if you'll suggest, well, this was part of the Egyptian sculpture and design, right? They carved it out in this way. It's not true. It wasn't made by man. It was made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem made this magnificent sight. It was worth turning around to see. Okay, and the Medrash goes on to describe some things which are difficult for us to understand. The Gra, in source number 4, where he describes these terms, he says, What was so exciting about this? I mean, it's nice, it's different, it's interesting. I've never seen a perfectly square mountain or cliff before. Says the Vilna Gaon, where it's bolded in source number 4, V'zeu chiddush gadol she'ein b'nivra tmunas ribua. This is a great chiddush, because there is nothing in the natural world, as we spoke about a few weeks ago. Talmud Yerushalmi says there is nothing in the natural world which was created perfectly square. So this was the exception to that rule, apparently. The Talmud Yerushalmi says nothing Hashem created is perfectly square. This was the one place that Hashem made something perfectly square. Very unusual, very interesting. She'ein b'nivra tmunas ribua. The Nitziv, who also wrote a commentary on the Mechilta, adds a little bit more to this, somewhat along the lines of the Vilna Gaon, in source number 5. Mefarish ma tam tziva kadosh baruch hu sheyamdu lefnei pi achiros. Why did Hashem ask them to turn around and stand before, again, this very strange square cliff? Hu mishum sheyadavar nifla lo kederach havanim shein mishupaos. It was like no other cliff in the world. It had no incline. Ve'od yoser shayim rubos. And not only was it, you know, you have places in the world which is, you have a 90 degree climb, but here it was perfectly square. The klal hu shekol ma'aseh shamayim hu agul. Quotes the Tosefta, quotes the Yerushalmi, everything in the world has curves. It's not perfectly round, but it has curves. V'zeh hayah meruba, v'lo shebnei adam ikitzu asan, ela ma'aseh shamayim, like the Medrash says, it was created by the hands of heaven. And the Nitziv says, and this was a place of avodah zarah for the Egyptians, and that's why, because it was so unique, the Egyptians believed it maybe had a certain koach, and Hashem wants them to turn around and say, take a look at that, because now I'm going to show you who HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is. I'm going to show you what God really looks like. Don't be fooled, again, by this image, by that which appears before your eyes. So again, according to the Gra, according to the Nitziv, Pi Achiros is the exception to the rule. It's the one place in the world that was created perfectly square. Very interesting. Now there are others who have a different approach to the Talmud Yerushalmi, which kind of takes the excitement out of this location. Right, how would they explain it? What does it mean when the Yerushalmi says there's nothing in the world that's perfectly square? So if you look at source number 6, Hadrash Va'iyun, the Raisha Rav of Aaron Levine, he explains this Talmud Yerushalmi, and he uses the Yerushalmi as a question on this. Instead of saying, well, this is the one exception to that rule that nothing is square, he says, maybe we can make the two opinions fit together. He says where it's bolded, in source number 6, Ve'ich amru da'aslam shal pi achiros nivram rubas bidei shemayim. How could the Medrash claim that this place is perfectly square? The Yerushalmi says there is no such thing. The Gemara goes on to explain. No. The Yerushalmi goes on and explains. When it said that nothing is square in the natural world, that means no living creature. You will never see a square bird or a square fish. You'll never see a square snake, as we'll talk about later on this evening. But when it comes to foods, it's possible to find something that's square. Says the Raisha Rav, the imkein yesh lomer degam b'domeim yesh meruba. It could be that even though the Yerushalmi says only food could sometimes be square, maybe we could apply that to all things of the ground. Rocks could be square. Other things that appear in the natural world can be square. It's just that people aren't square, animals aren't square, fish, birds are not square. Okay. And he says at the end, in the final line, "Mashma derak b'balechayim in meruba." Only animals are not square. Aval b'domeim b'tzomeach, flowers, plants, inanimate objects, rocks and the like, can be square. V'zemat im l'dvarinu. So Pi Achiros is not so impressive after all, according to the Raisha Rav. Okay, it's somewhat rare. Again, you don't find it every day that you pick up something which is perfectly square without having any man-made influence. But he says it is possible to find such a thing. It's not a contradiction to the Talmud Yerushalmi statement. And in his Shailos and Tshuvos, in source number 7, the Shailos and Tshuvos Avnei Chayfetz, he adds a proof to this. He says the proof is the Choshen. The stones of the Choshen were perfectly square. Well, were they carved? Were they man-made? So he says, the avan of the choshen, haynu b'domeim, yesh meruba b'tolda. They were perfectly square naturally. How do you know that? The Rambam says, he quotes the Rambam, d'havanim b'choshen uve'efod, hayu merubos. They were perfectly square. Ulefia amor b'ramban. The Ramban writes, ha'avanim ha'elu, lo hayu nechsavos min ha'mechsav. They weren't carved, they weren't etched out at all. They were created that way. Rak hayu kin b'tolda v'nevrao kach. So apparently we see another example, right? Just to bolster his claim that there are natural things that are square. There are rocks that are square. There are stones that are square. There are plants that could be square. And here we have these two large cliffs, Pi Achiros, which are perfectly square. Very interesting. The question that we have to ask ourselves as we try to explore our first shape for the evening, which is the square or the cube, right? The question is, why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu make it that way? Practically, al derech avodah, what can we learn from it? Why did Hashem make a world where nothing is perfectly square? So if we go back to our shiur from Parsha Shmos a few weeks ago, for those who aren't here, I apologize, this might be a little bit confusing, but we spoke about the message of the Jew, V'dibarta bam. The mission statement of the Jew is V'dibarta bam. What did we explain? We explained that the mission of the Jew is to turn the bays, the three-sided bays, into a four-sided mem sofi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us to partner with him. He says, I can only protect you on three sides, but you have free will to make choices, to bring certain influences into your life, or to keep certain influences out of your life. And I ask you to work towards building that fourth and final wall. That's what V'dibarta bam, it's the secret. We explained the V'dibarta bam. Turn the bet, the three-sided bet, into a mem sofi. So perhaps we offered that as an explanation why Hashem did not make things square in the world. Because it's our job. It's our job to bring the geula by building that fourth and final wall. So I just want to add a few points to expand on that idea tonight. You know, we spend a lot of time working on that task. Until Mashiach comes, we're not done with that task. Right? As much as we try to keep these negative influences out, right? Unfortunately, until the world of Mashiach comes, where we're isolated and safe within that safety net, within that box, right? We're still working on that task. But there are times and there are places in Jewish history, some of the past and some today, where we experience that feeling of being safe within that box. And what would be an example of that? So one such place where in Jewish history we had that safety, and that was the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, Har HaBayis, was perfectly square. 500 amos by 500 amos. So I found in the Sefer Nefesh Chaim, in source number 8, Rav Chaim Palagi, a great Svardi Chacham, he asked this question. He says, Beis HaMikdash, Tam Shahayi Revua, why was the Beis HaMikdash perfectly square? Kedei Lahorus Ala Achdus. Because square represents achdus. We'll see tonight that circle really represents achdus more so than square. It's hard to understand what he means, and he goes on to say maybe our shuls should be square for the same reason. This room is decently square. Got an interesting domed roof. Right? But we should try to build things in the shape of a square. Holy places should be in a square. Why? So I think the answer is, based on what we explained, v'dibarta bam. The shul, the Beis HaMikdash, is what? Is our safety net. Right? It's the place where we get a taste of the geula, where we're closed in on all sides, keeping out those negative influences that we explain, try to enter through the northern side. That's one example. Where else, Bizman Azeh, right? Okay, we have the shul, which is an extension of the Beis HaMikdash, but where else do we get a taste of geula today? In time? Shabbos. Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbos is a taste of what's going to come. Right? The world of, we're shielded by Shabbos. We're safe within the, you know, within the Dalet Amba, so to speak, of Shabbos. So how do we see that Shabbos is connected to the concept of square? So Rav Yitzchak Huttner has a beautiful explanation where he describes what happens when Shabbos arrives. Again, the Yerushalmi says there's nothing square during the 6 days of creation. Which almost makes it sound like when Shabbos arrives, we enter that world of the square. Where do we see that? It says Rav Huttner, he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos in source number 9. Ka'achayim min haglos Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai. How did Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai prepare himself for Shabbos? What did he do to get ready for Shabbos? And I dream that one day, maybe I'll get a taste of Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai's Erev Shabbos. It's not so realistic for many of us, racing around to the last minute trying to... But Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, he knew how to prepare ahead, much better than often we do. Erev Shabbos meviyim lo areva maleya chamin. On Erev Shabbos, he would be brought a pitcher full of hot water. Viruchetz panav, yadav, viraglav, he'd wash himself with warm water. Umisate fe yoshev besedinin, and he would wrap himself in some type of very fine garment. Hamitu yatzin. Which had tzitzis. Okay. Why do you have to mention that his garment had four corners on it? That it had tzitzis? Rav Huttner explains, it's in Yiddish. I put the source in for the Yiddish speakers amongst us. I'm not going to read it inside. I'll tell you what he says. Rav Huttner says that up to Shabbos, there's a certain expression of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's glory in the world. And with Shabbos' arrival, he quotes the Medrash, with Shabbos' arrival, the honor of Hashem took on a whole new level. Our interaction with the honor of God takes on a whole new level. The honor that a person is assigned is often connected to his clothing. The Gemara even says that a person's clothing is called his honor. So when Shabbos arrives, it makes sense, says Rav Huttner, as the honor, so to speak, is changing, that we also change. A person has an obligation to change it to Big Day Shabbos. Why dafka, a square garment? So Rav Huttner goes on to explain, because it makes sense. If I'm changing from the world of the 6 days of creation to the world of Shabbos, I should put on a garment that represents something that's radically different than the 6 days of creation. The 6 days of creation is the world of nothing being square. So Shabbos, I'll put on something that's square. But I think we could say even one step deeper, based on, again, our understanding of the mem sofit, the square being what? The world of geula. As we enter Shabbos, that world of geula, we want to attach ourselves to a garment that represents, again, the square represents that world of geula. It's a taste of la'asid lava. Just give you one other example of perhaps how we experience the square today. The Shla writes in his Shara Osios, Os Kuf, that a mikvah should be square. It's a big discussion, la halacha, does a mikvah really need to be square? Often the mikvah pit, right, is shaped in the shape of a square. And the Ramak brings down Api Kabbalah, there are many reasons why the mikvah should be shaped, he says, like a mem sofit. That's his lashon. the mikvah should be like a mem sofi. What's the pshat? So I think if we understand what are we doing, what's happening when we go to the mikvah, we can understand very simply what's taking place here, why the mikvah ideally should be square. The Shem Yishmuel quotes his father in source number 11, what happens when you go to the mikvah? Right? It's somewhat self-understood, but he explains very beautifully. Ksiv mikvah Yisrael Hashem, ma mikvah mitaras etameyim, afa kadosh baruch hu mitaras Yisrael. Right? Hashem purifies the Jewish people like a mikvah. Says the Shem Yishmuel in his writings to Shabbos Shuvah, he quotes his father, Perish, ki gvulos chalak hakadosh baruch hu ba'olamo. Hashem set up boundaries, borders to the universe. Bruim shabayam, kevan shem olim le'abasham yad meitzim. Those creatures that live in the sea, if you take them out of the water, they die. And the reverse is also true. V'chein bruim b'yabasha, eina yecholim l'chayos b'mayim. Those, us, human beings, who live on dry land, we cannot survive beneath the water. Right, obviously with gear we can. But on our own, naturally, we cannot survive beneath the water. It's not our environment. So what am I doing? What am I reenacting when I go to the mikvah, when a person goes to the mikvah? Alkena tovel b'mayim. When I immerse myself completely in the world of water, which is a world that's detached from humanity. It's almost a spiritual suicide. Right? Not in a negative sense, God forbid, but a form of rebirth. I go to an environment where I cannot survive, and I re-emerge as what? As a completely new person. The sinful person, the tamei person who I once was, I'm transforming that person. So why does the mikvah need to be square? So I thought you could say, very simply, right? As I re-emerge from that state of tuma tatara, I'm being born again, I want to have my mission statement right in front of me. I want to see that mem sofit. I want to see the mikvah shaped like the square, so that as I leave the mikvah and I go out to the world, I remember that that's my purpose, that's my goal, to create that safety net, to create that square, so to speak, within my life. Okay, so this is how he explained this, you know, a few insights to connect us back to our shir from a few weeks ago. But now I want to go in a very different direction, a different explanation why Hashem made everything in the world with curves. Right, why? Maybe that's a better way to ask it. Not why didn't Hashem make things square, but why does everything have somewhat of a rounded edge? And many things are very smooth and very perfectly rounded. There's a very fascinating medrash that describes Bnei Yisrael getting the Torah. The Malachim came down from Shemayim to escort HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Bnei Yisrael saw the way the Malachim were positioned, and they were jealous. Says the medrash in source number 12. Bisha shenigla Kadosh Baruch Hu al Har Sinai, yardu imo chaf beiz revavos shamalachim. When Hashem came down to Har Sinai, thousands upon thousands of angels descended with him. Vayukulam asuyim degalim degalim, and they were all camped in a particular way, right? The way the Jewish people would eventually camp in the midbar. Kevan sheraus on Yisrael shem asuyim degalim degalim, hischilam esavim ludegalim. Bnei Yisrael saw they were camped so nicely, so neatly, so perfectly, and they said, "We also want degalim." We also want to have a nice structure to our camp. Right? It's orderly, it's organized. Amru alavai kach anu nasim degalim kamosan. So Hashem says, no problem. I would be happy to make you. Amru l'makadosh baruch hu, manas avisem. What do you desire? Lasos degalim? Chayechem, shanim amalim mishalaseichem. You want degalim, you'll get degalim. Miyad hodiyah kadosh baruch hu, assembly Yisrael. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, go make degalim just like the Jews desire. What's the pshat? They wanted degalim. What did they see that they desire? What was it about these malachim that they desired? So we quoted last week in our shir describing how a person has to live a balanced lifestyle. And we quoted the Rambam in Hilchos Deos that a person has to try to walk the middle path. Unfortunately, at times we stray. We have certain human tendencies, either things we're born with or things unfortunately we acquire, where we go to a particular extreme. And the way to correct that bad midah is to go to the opposite extreme until you become balanced once again. What about malachim? Do Malachim ever have that problem? So the answer is, Malachim never have that problem. Right? The son of the Ostrovster, the Heilige Ostrovster, he was a very powerful, very chashuv Hasidic Rebbe. I've spoken about him a little bit in the past. So his son wrote a sefer, it's in the back of his work. It's called Kadshei Yecheskel. And in there he describes what the Malachim are like. He says in source 13, Hinei yadua ki etzal ha-Malachim. Thank you. When it comes to angels, angels have no Yetzirah. Angels have no Yetzirah. And therefore what? The angel never strays from that central point. The angels are always equidistant from where they need to be. And therefore what? He says, this is like the Gemara at the end of Maseches Tanis. The Gemara at the end of Maseches Tanis says, La'asid lavo, Hashem's going to make a circle of the tzaddikim. The idea being that different tzaddikim with different hanhagos, different practices. Rav Kook felt one way, the Satmar Rebbe felt a different way, Rav Zanin felt a different way. Different tzaddikim, all with their different approaches to many issues of Jewish life, and yet they're all going to be equidistant from that central point of the circle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to sit in the middle, and all the tzaddikim are going to gather around him, showing that, you know, we've all perfected ourselves, we're like the angels, we're properly balanced. Therefore what? So says the Kodesh Yecheskel, where it's bolded in source 13 in the middle, Hainu da'az yivutal ha'yitzahara. The time will come when what? Where everyone will be equidistant. The Yitzhar will no longer be present. V'lo yeshum netiyah la'achas me'akitzvos. A time will come where we don't stray to any of the sides. Where we're able to maintain, so to speak, that perfect formation. B'nai Yisrael look at the malachim when they come down. And they see that they're arranged in this beautiful way. And B'nai Yisrael say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we also want to have a camp. You know, we're used to thinking of B'nai Yisrael traveling more in a box formation. But the Kodesh Yecheskel seems to be implying that they were able to fill in those corners, so to speak, that it was a perfectly round formation. The Jewish people say, we want to strive to be mevatel our Yetzirah, to also be dedicated to that central point of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So now you understand the advantage the circle has over the square. The square has corners. The square, if you're in a square, not every point is equidistant from that central point. But the circle represents a certain oneness, a certain unity. And in that sense, the circle is a better shape, so to speak, than the square, which we've been discussing. And then he goes on and he says the following insight from his father, which brings us back to our question. Why did Hashem not make anything square in the natural world? Now that we have a better understanding of circles and squares, how does it work? Why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu make it that way? So we need a little introduction to make sense of the words of the Ashtrasir. He starts by explaining a mission in Maseches Nedarim. A person makes a neder, he makes an oath, and he's bound by his words. But sometimes a person says something that's so utterly ridiculous that it's not binding at all. Right? Even if it's something that he says, you know, if I can't fulfill this, then this should be binding. There's no way you can fulfill it, so it's as if you said nothing. What would be an example? Says the Mishnah in Source 14. Nedre Havai. What's an example of a neder that's utterly worthless? Right? It's silliness, it makes no sense. If a person says, Konam im lo ra'isi b'derech hazek hiyosei Mitzrayim, I'm going to refrain from eating this fruit, let's say, if I walk outside and I don't see 600,000 people like those left inside. Right? Well, he walks out and he doesn't see 600,000, so he says, okay, can't eat the fruit. No, we say the nether is worthless. You've said something that is totally impossible, and therefore it's as if you've said nothing. Or how about another example? Im lo ra'isi nachash kekoras be'savad. I'm going to refrain from eating this fruit if I walk outside, and what? If I don't see a snake like the beam of the olive press. Right? You'll never see a snake as big as the beam of an olive press. It's a worthless statement, and again, it's not binding. But the Gemara in Source 15 goes on and asks, hold on a second. There once was a snake that was terrorizing the community, and it was a massive snake. It was like a korat beit avad. It was like the press. It was like the beam from the olive press. So why are you telling me it's unrealistic? There was such a snake in history. In the times of King Shapur, it was terrorizing the people, and they had this whole crazy plan to stop the snake. They took these bales of hay, and they tied Nebuch, poor animals, to the outside of this hay. Right? And this poor animal was, they threw the animal to the snake, but before they threw it, they stuck a torch up inside the haystack. So when the snake swallowed this massive snake swallowed this whole thing, eventually the snake was burnt from the inside. They threw 13 bales of hay at it and they ate them all up. It's a whole crazy story. So the Gemara says, well, you see, it's possible. There is such a snake that could be that big. So the Gemara says in the second line, in Source 15, Amar Shmuel, no. You know what you said? You said, if I see a snake that's like that, but it's taruf. It's taruf. I'll explain what taruf means in a second. So the Gemara says, well, all snakes are taruf. It says, no. But if he says, I'm going to see a snake that's taruf on its back, oh, that's impossible. What's taruf? So many Mefarshim explain, taruf means rigid. Snakes are rigid on their throat. Snakes aren't rigid on their back. So it's impossible to see such a thing. No snake is rigid on its back. That's how some explain. But the Nemukei Yosef in Source 16, based on the Yerushalmi, says that taruf means square. There's no such thing as a square-backed snake. If a person claims, I'm going to walk out of my house, and if I don't see a square-backed snake, then I'm going to refrain from eating this fruit, your words are worthless. You will never see a square-backed snake. And now the question is, why not? What does the square-backed snake represent? Again, according to all opinions, the Yerushalmi says, nothing square in the Bria. You will never see a square animal. You will never see a square snake. Why not? Why did the Kadosh Baruch Hu make square snakes? So Ashtrasir, to resolve this, brings in one more point. He brings in a Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos in Source 17. If a person takes something, and he throws it, and he intends to throw it two amos, Right? And it happens to go beyond, it goes four amos on Shabbos, which is a biblical prohibition. Right? Is he in violation of Shabbos? The answer is no. Why? Because he only intended to throw it two amos. But says the Ashtar, it depends what you throw. If you throw something like a ball, and you say, well, I expect it to stop after 2 hours, of course it's not going to stop. You understand? It's going to bounce outside of two amos. Now we can tie it all together. Look what he says in Source 18. Avalzeu dafka bedavar meruba. If you throw something square, you can expect that it's not going to roll, it's not going to bounce. If it happens to take a crazy bounce, you never intended that, and therefore you haven't violated Shabbos. Avalim zarak davar agul. But if you throw something round, chayiv, the cave in the dark is galgal, something round, of course, is going to roll, you know full well that it's going to roll. Says the Ashtar, so it's bolted. Chazinan mizeh, the davar agul, darkul is galgal, velo davar meruba. Something round, by definition, it moves, it rolls. Something square does not. Now you can understand the square-backed snake. Look what he says. It's amazing. Took a lot of work to get here, but look what he says. V'gamzos yadua. What does the snake represent? D'kol achatam sharsha minachash akadmoni. When you think of a snake, you think of the Yetzirah. You think of the root of all evil. The snake. Shehechti la'adam beitzadas. Says the Gemara. If a person says, I'm going to see a square-backed snake. I'm going to walk out of my house. And there's a chance I'll see a square-backed snake. We say to that person, there's no such thing as a square-backed snake. What does it mean? Where it's bolded. Hainu. Shem yomer adam. Daf shenafal b'chet. I'm going to do an aveira. I'm going to engage the snake, but it's going to be square. It's not going to lead to anything else. It's not going to roll. It's not going to bounce. I can do this aveira, and it will not affect who I am as a person. It won't affect other areas of my avodas Hashem. Lo yiskal galay dezel avera cheres. Right, this avera is not going to be goreres avera, like it says in Pirkei Avos. Yeida shezen nedre havai. What you're saying is worthless. It's not true. There's no such thing as a squareback snake. Every avera that we do matters. It rolls. It leads to something else. You can think it's a minor infraction. It's not going to lead to anything. Hashem, I promise you, if I do this, I'll still be a good Jew in many other areas. It won't affect anything else. It will affect other things. That's the lesson of the squareback snake. If you claim that you're not going to be changed by it, you will be changed by it. That's the negative side of the squareback snake that you'll never see. What's the positive side? Continues his son in the next paragraph. But I can flip it around the other way. What happens if I do an avera, and I think the avera has pushed me so far away? I've left that circle of the tzaddikim, and I'm in the corner of that square. I'm distanced from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a point of no return. says the Ostrovser son, he says, let's take a look. We can learn the lesson the other way, of the square-backed snake. The message of the circle, the idea of the circle, is that everything is equidistant from that central point. Like we explained earlier. But when I deal with a square, there are points that are farther away from that central point, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. Comes the Tana and tells us, Lashmiinu, the al yisya'i shadam in a tshuva. A person does an aveira and he says, this is a snake, this is an aveira that's square. We say to such a person, there's no such thing. There's no aveira that you're so far away that you can't return to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And if you go back to the Mishnah, the other example that the Mishnah gives of what? Of a nether that's totally unrealistic is what? The Jews who left Mitzrayim. You think you're so far away, you can't return. The Jews were on the 49th level of Tumah and they found a way out. Don't ever think that the aveira that you did has pushed you too far away, that is impossible for you to return. So the dual message of the square-backed snake, on the one hand, realize that your aveiras will lead to other things. Don't think that this can be an isolated event. But at the same time, when you do that aveira, realize that you're still shayach, you still have a possibility of joining that circle of tzaddikim, lasid lava. So we've uncovered squares, we've uncovered some of the secrets of circles, and right, let's go a little bit further. My mother, I wasn't planning on showing everyone this. I brought it just as a form of kibud aim, I guess. My mother saw I was giving a shiur about shapes this week, so she was in the store, so she bought me this nice baby book called I Love Shapes. And I was thinking, you know, what shape? You can take a look after. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. Thank God we have a 2-month-old in the house, so I can justify my behavior having this book with me. Right, but the question, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves shapes. So what shape does Hashem love more? Again, the square represents that world of Geula, trying to build that fourth and final wall. The circle represents also Geula, the circle of Tzaddikim. No? So what's Hashem's favorite shape? So, let's look at the world. How did Hashem construct the world? How are most things created in the world? So believe it or not, there are sources that say, and it's going to sound foreign to our modern sensibilities, but there are sources that say that the world, in fact, is square. Right? You have sources in the Torah and Tanakh that indicate that the world has certain indications that it's square. What do I mean by that? Let's take a look for a second. The Targum Yonasan, when describing the stones of the Choshen, which we said earlier are square, uses the following expression. It says that the stones were arba triginon de alma. They were like the four corners of the earth. We always talk about it. In Shemoneh Esrei every day we talk about Hashem gathering in from the four corners of the earth. Well, corners to me sounds more like square than it does circle. And the Vilna Gaon is even cited in Source 21 in the Gilyonei Hashas, Rav Yosef Engel. He quotes from the Vilna Gaon. He says, from the Alios Eliyahu, B'shem Hagrami Vilna, Sha'aisa Svaraso She'ena Olam Kaduri. The world perhaps is not round. Again, whether the Vilna Gaon believed this or not, the Vilna Gaon studied the Zohar. The Zohar says very clearly that the world is round. Presumably the Vilna Gaon knew that the world was round. But there are sources that indicate that the world has corners, so to speak. He quotes the Pasuk in Iyov, Lechoz bekanfos haaretz, to grab hold of the corners of the earth. Sounds again like the world is somewhat square. We talk about corners, right? It brings a proof from Tzitzis, right? That when we talk about corners, we mean a corner that's truly square, not a rounded corner. But of course, as we know the world to be today, the world is more of a round shape, of a sphere shape, right? And we have many sources that indicate that as well. The Mishnah describes in Maseches Avodah Zarah what type of images are off limits. If you see a certain image, do I have to be concerned that this object was used as a Avodah Zarah? Right? So if I see an image, I see some type of statue, and it's holding certain items, I can be certain that it's used as a Avodah Zarah. What items are in its hand? A staff, a bird, or a sphere? Says the Gemara in Source 22, why when you see an image holding a sphere, does that represent Avodah Zarah? What's the imagery of this, you know, again, this image holding this ball in its hand? Kadur, says the Gemara, Shetofes es asmo tachas kol olam kulo ki kadur. Because it's as if this person, this Avodah Zarah, is saying, I control the world, which is sphere. And Tosfos says a remarkable thing. Look at this. I don't have a clue what this means. I understand what it means, but I don't really understand what it means. It says Tosfos in Source 23, Sha'olam agul, the world is round, as we know it to be. Kedi'is sabirushalmi, Alexandros Mokta, Alexander the Great, who dominated much of the world. Olalamala, he rose up above. I don't know if that means he built a rocket ship, if he took a hot air balloon, he took an airplane, I don't know what he did, but somehow he got up high enough, which again, we only know in modern times, they had the ability to perceive this. He somehow was able to elevate himself high enough. He was far enough removed from planet Earth that he was able to see that the world, in fact, was round. Right? Very fascinating idea. And the truth is, the world, as it originally was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we're going to believe, again, we have to deal with this question of the corners of the Earth. Okay, maybe for another time, we can all think about it. How do we resolve that seemingly... statement that's difficult to understand. What does it mean, corners of the earth, if the world is perfectly round? But the truth is, if you go back really to the beginning of time, when Hashem initially created the world, it was perfectly round. You know, our world today has mountains, it has bumps, it has ditches, and all sorts of caverns, right? The Maritz Chias writes in Maseches Nida in Source 24, that when Hashem created the world, it was round like a marble. And it was only over time that it started to develop some of the, you know, nooks and crannies that it exists today. Look what he says, it's remarkable. Source 24. He says, "Diadua besipure koras ateva, debetchila sabria, haisa aretz kaduritz legamri." When the world was created, it was perfectly round. Velo haya lo har, velo bika. There were no mountains. There were no Grand Canyons, right? There were, none of this was present. Vetmunazu hitivis kmo kol tzava shemayim. And it was perfectly round like the heavenly bodies, like the sun, like the stars, like other things in the universe. Okay? And he quotes, he says, you know, how can this be? How does this happen? So he continues where it's bolded. V'ulam, b'rabot hayamim, ayidei aruchos ha-mistaros b'li hafsik. Over time, the winds helped to form the winds that were blowing through the world, all sorts of natural disasters. He says, ayidei ha-mabu mayim, asher nishava baretz, nistavu mizeh harim v'gvaos. Right, mountains and valleys were etched, were shaped into the world, and the world became a little bit less perfectly round. But we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, for the most part, according to most opinions, and as we know it today, the world was created round. It seems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's favorite shape, if you had to pick, as much as the square represents, again, that part of our part of the Bria, of building that square, that safety net of Geula, right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the circle, perhaps more than anything else. And if you're not sure, if we need to just see a source to bring out this idea, again, even though our eyes seem to tell it to us, but if you look in Source 25, the biography of Rav Zalman of Volozhin. Rav Zalman of Volozhin was the brother of Rav Chaim of Volozhin, who himself was a tremendous genius. They say about his brother of Zalman, he was in some ways even greater than he, although perhaps less known. He says that one time an elderly fellow came to him with a sefer called Nechmad Vinayim, and he read him the following paragraph. He says at the end of the first line, Hine chachamim higidu, v'lo kachadu miitanu, ki tmunas ha'agula yikara hi ma'od b'enei Hashem. Hashem loves the round shape. Hashem loves the circle. He loves the sphere. What's the proof? Use your own eyes. Saw inecha marom v'tira. Raise up your eyes to the heavens and see for yourself. Ki bachar Hashem osam b'tavnis ha'gula. Look how many things Hashem created that are, in many respects, perfectly round. Hine Hashemayim, Ushmei Hashemayim, B'kol Koch Ve'or, the heavens and all that's within them, the stars, Asa Hashem Osam B'tavnis Hagula. He made it round. The earth itself, V'chein Ha'aretz, Nasa B'tmunas Hagula. Everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates is round. V'gam Kol Tzatzeev, V'chol Maaseh Bereishis, Kulam Nivra B'tmunas Hagula, O Karavla. Everything is round, perfectly round, or somewhat round. V'lo Timsa B'chol Abruim Bria, Asher Tmunas Merubas. And taking us back to the Talmud Yerushalmi, there's nothing in the world that's square. So it seems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desired shape is round. And there's a lot to say about this beyond how we apply this in our lives. I'll just give you one example. You know, why is it on Pesach, right, we're knowing to eat round matzahs? You ever think about that? The hand matzahs are always round. A lot of interesting tshuva literature, which I would have liked to share with you. There's no time for it. But why is it that we make the matzahs round? Well, as the Jewish people are being born out of Mitzrayim, as we go and look back one last time, and we see the perfectly square piachiros, right? That which is foreign, so to speak, to Hashem's universe. We march out of there, and we hold up our round matzah, and there are proofs, there are indications that the Jews left Mitzrayim with round matzah, exactly like we have it today. And says the Shalos and Tshuvos Avnei Chefetz in source 27, he says, Noagin gam lasos hamatzos lepesach agulos. We make matzah for Pesach round. Why? Mishum deturas ha'igol chashuvahi etzel ha'makom b'yoser. Because Hashem loves round. And as we start off the new year, by Nisan, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, as we kick off the Rosh of the Shalosh Regalim, right, we do so with a round matzah in our hand, indicating that we're going to partner with the Kadosh Baruch Hu to help to create that machol, that circle of the tzaddikim, la'asid lafa. So we've spoken about square, we've spoken about circle, right, cubes, round. Okay, and there's one more shape I'd like to touch on tonight. And that is the triangle. Right, we just made a case, the Kadosh Baruch Hu loves round. Explained earlier, Kadosh Baruch Hu loves square. Does Hashem like triangles? Do we have any indication? It's hard to find triangles in Torah, in Halacha, in Medrash. Right, but the truth is, the triangle, which is three-sided, might have a certain chavivus by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem loves things, apparently, that come in threes. Where do we see this? The Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Yisro. Everything in the Torah world comes in packages of three. Who knew? Right, look at this list that the Medrash puts together. I numbered them for you, just so you could see. And the Medrash, in fact, goes on beyond this. I figured I would spare everyone from reading the entire source, but let's just take a look. V'akol hayim mishulash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves threes. Everything in the world comes in packages of three. HaTorah Meshuleshes, Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. The Torah comes in threes. Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. Mishnah Meshuleshes, Talmud, Halachos, Agados. The Mishnah comes in threes. You have the Gemara itself, the Halacha, and the Agadata, the stories of the Gemara. Hasar Sar Meshulash, the saviors of the Jewish people, the family that took us out of Mitzrayim, Miriam, Aaron, Moshe. Tfila, Mishuleshes, Erev, Avoker, Vitzarayim. Kedusha, Mishuleshes, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Yisrael, the Jewish people, come in packages of three. Kohanim, Levi'im, Yisraelim. Moshe. Moshe has three letters in his name. Who does he come from? He comes from Shevet Levi, which has three letters in his name. Who are the descendants of who? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the three of us, of course. And it goes on and on and on. Source number 10, right? 10. Bechodesh, Mishulash. We finally got the Torah in what month? Of course, the third month. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. What other month could you expect? And where was it? It was Al-Har Sin, right? In Midbar Sin, Vayachanu with Midbar Sin. Sin, of course, also has three letters. L'shloshes Yom Niskachu. They spent 3 days preparing themselves. And the Medrash goes on and on and on, showing us that every detail of our spiritual lives are connected to the number three. Why so? What does Hashem like about three so much? Again, it doesn't have that perfect equality of the circle. It doesn't have that taste of lasid lavo, of the dibart, the bum, of the mem. And what does Hashem love about the number three? So I think the answer is found in the Zohar that appears in source number 30. The Zohar describes three things, right? Achut ha-meshulash, shalob meher yinatik. The achut ha-meshulash, the three-ply cord that is so deeply interwoven that it can never be torn apart. What are those three things that are so deeply connected? Says the Zohar, gimel dargun inon miskashrin dabida. There are three things that are deeply connected to each other. Kut jabrichu, Hashem, Oraisa, the Torah, v'Yisrael, the Jewish people. Hashem is infinitely great. The Jewish people, as great as we are, we're infinitely small compared to Hashem. But through the Kalach of Torah, right, through the transmitter of Torah, we're able to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ourselves. The three-ply cord that can't be torn apart. Hashem, the Jewish people, and the Torah. Says Rav David of Lalla, Rav David Biederman, one of the great tzaddikim, he says that's what the Arizal was hinting to when he says in the piyut, in the tefillah that some people recite on Friday night in Source 29, Bivavin tiskatar. Bivavin tiskatar, to link yourself in. A vav is a hook. To link yourself in. But he says, it's hinting to this idea. There are three ways in Sifrei Chassidus and Kabbalah how you spell the letter vav. Some letters, there's no question. There's only one way to spell the letter aleph. If I was going to write out the letter aleph, I would write aleph, lamed, pei. If I was writing the letter bet, I would write beis, yud, tav. Right? There's no machlokas about that. Some letters can be spelled different ways. Hey can be spelled hey, hey aleph, hey yud. Vav can also be spelled three ways. Says the Lalla of a Rebbe, of David of Lalla. Look what he says in the box where I have in front of you. Vav, aleph, vav. One way to spell vav is vav, aleph, vav, which is gematria 13, gematria echad, represents a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Another way to spell vav is vav, yud, vav, which is 22, which represents the 22 letters of the Torah. And then, of course, you can spell vav, 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 which is what? 12, which is the 12 shvatim. When the Arizal says, bevav in tiskatar, the vavs are connected. He's hinting to what? These three vavs. Right? The vav, aleph, vav of Hashem, the vav, yud, vav of the Torah, and the vav, vav of the shvatim. The three-ply cord that can never be torn apart. Good. So this is the threes. Okay, so a triangle, perhaps, is made up of three vavs. Says Rav Pinchas Friedman, it's a chashuv rav in Eretz Yisrael, the Belzer community. He says, perhaps that's what we're saying in the following pasuk. Source 31, as we come to the conclusion, Ushmartim eschuko saivas mishpatai, asher yaseh osama adam v'chai bahem, ani Hashem. If you want to live, if you want to stay connected, v'chai bahem, you have to connect the vavs. Right? Vav times 3, you take the letter vav, gematria 6 times 3 is 18, is chai. V'chai, if you want to live, bahem. Bahem is gematria 47. What happens if you add up vav aleph vav, plus vav yud vav, plus vav vav, 47. V'chai bahem. Connect the vavs and you'll live a life that's meaningful and is connected. And then Rav Pinchas Friedman, you know, I got a few text messages this week from various people, some who attend this year, some people who listen online. They said, "No, when are we going to start the Purim Shir?" So I said, "Okay, so you're in luck. Tonight we'll get a, you know, Tu B'Shvat hasn't even come yet, but we'll get a taste of Purim." Why do we eat Humintashen? The triangular Humintashen. You think, if I ask you to think of something in the Jewish, you know, in Jewish life that has to do with a triangle, can you tell me anything else besides the Humintashen? All right, I found some good stuff on the Magen David also. I will save it for another time. But why do we eat the triangular Humintashen? Says Rav Pinchas Friedman in the final source 32, in the Shvilei Pinchas on Megillas Esther. Hinei Haman HaRasha, Bikish LaHafrid Ben Gimel HaVavin. Haman HaRasha wanted to tear apart these three Vav that represent what? Oraisa Kuchabrichu V'Yisrael. Vayedeshi Yishtach V'Yisrael Letzelem B'Yimei Nebuchadnezzar. At first the Jews break their connection with Hashem. How do they break their connection with Hashem? By bowing down to Avodah Zarah. V'chishev Shal Yedei Chet Avodah Zarah Nifridu Yisrael Mekadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps the Vav of the Jewish people and the Vav of Hashem have been torn apart. And then goes on, Haman and Achashverosh work to break apart the next Vav. V'hosif L'achshalas Yisrael Asher B'shushan Le'anos Misudaso Sh'oso Rasha. Go against the laws of the Torah, go enjoy yourself at the Suda of Achashverosh, and you'll break apart the relationship between what? The Jewish people and the Torah. And the Vavs will be broken apart, Kuchabrichu, Araisa, and Yisrael will be torn apart. But of course Haman was wrong. Because again, it's a Kesher Shel Kayama, it's a knot that can never be torn apart. And Haman made that tragic mistake. Says Rav Pinchas Friedman, where it's bolded, he says, Yumtuk levar b'zeh minag Yisrael torahi. Based on this, we can explain the minag Yisrael of what? Of eating the Humintashen. Haman wants to tear apart the three Vavs, the three-sided Vav, like the three-sided Humintashen. Right? But he was wrong. It could never happen. What is a Humintashen? He says in the final two lines, it's shaped, again, like a triangle representing these three Vavs that are deeply connected. But why not just make a cookie? Why not make a cookie that's square? Why do you have to fill it with some type of sweet filling? And again, every Minog Yisrael has deep meaning behind it. If we'll learn nothing else, we'll learn that there's what to think about. Asher mamalim oso b'mine metuka. We fill it with something sweet. Why? L'rames. Shemapolas haman haisa b'zchus hamiluyim. What term is used when you spell out a letter, when you expand it? When you take the letter Vav and you turn it into a Vav Aleph of a Vav Yud, it's called miloy. It's called filling it out. So we take our three Vavs, our three-sided cookie, and we fill it out. Right? We put that sweet filling in the middle to remind us that, again, this relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah, and the Jewish people can never be torn apart. So again, just something to whet our appetite a little bit. The circle, the square, and the triangle, the Mirtz Hashem will be Zocha, like the Nefesh Chaim said, to be back in the base of Mikdash in that perfected square. The Mirtz Hashem, we should be Zocha to see it B'Karav Yameinu. Good Shabbos to one of all.